a policeman. They found a dirty faced kid in a garbage can. Ooh, and I'm alone. I'm on the highway. Woody, dead or alive, dead or alive. Broken down and dirty, dressed in rags. But from the day my mama told me, boy, you pack your bags. I sent the mayor down in his pickup truck. Jury, look at me, say, how about it? And I'm alone, I'm on the highway. Woody, dead or alive, dead or alive.
Thomas Paine Podcast number 44. We made it to number 44. I swear, I didn't think we'd make it to number 4. Of course, we're doing it every day now with the pain in the morning, so it's not like when we started out, it was once a week. Hence the numbers 1 through 44. That's our weekly podcast. I call it the Big Wednesday podcast from my affection for the movie, Big Wednesday. If you haven't seen that movie, it is a classic. You can get it. You can get it on one of these places on television somewhere. Gary Busey, a whole bunch of other guys, Jan Michael Vincent. Back in the day, one of their first movies, you know, before they before they were ruined by Hollywood. Podcast 44, Thomas Paine, Podcast 44. I tell you, we got a great guest today. We got a great guest. And after I shut off the mics last night for Paine in the Morning Today show, I haven't really talked to anybody because I was resting my voice because it was a little beat up. That's bad news for a Tuesday because we did the More Paine show last night. And that's for subscribers on patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit. That's a subscriber only show. The voice was a little beat up. I said, man, I gotta I'm walking around here all day. Not talking to anybody, being very quiet and reserved. Voice is coming back, which is good. Just in time for the Big Wednesday podcast. And we got Dave Latour joining us today. He's a real heavyweight in Pennsylvania. He carved himself out a hell of a niche in Harrisburg, being an insider in many different areas. And we'll introduce him in a little bit. Founder of Latour Communications. And we have a personal history going back, as I do with many people, that we're slowly unrolling. Many of the characters in my past are being slowly unveiled on a intermittent basis, so to speak. I guess you could say I get around back in the day. What?
I get around.
Oh, wait a minute. That's not right. Cheer up out there, folks. It's tough, man. You know, I got a lot of people checking in with me, and I got about how hard it is now to conduct business because so many suppliers have shriveled up and bankrupted out and closed their doors. And it's tough out there, man. So you just, my advice to them is just keep on trucking. And the people out there, the general public who want products or whatever, and you're using small businesses, you have to understand that the landscape has changed. Not everybody is pumping out Amazon Prime deliveries. You got to relax a little bit. A lot of pressure on small businesses. They can't work the magic. You know, it takes years to get good vendors and supply chains established. And then when those vanish overnight, see, this is what the government doesn't tell you. You know, oh, the jobs are coming back. No, they're not. They're not coming back. In fact, it's pretty bad out there. But we're going to try to stay positive until the election as to not try to affect anything. But after the election, it's going to be a bloodbath. So we might as well bide our time here for the next couple weeks and see how things play out and try not to tip the apple cart one way or the other, because it's only the sake of our entire country and the balance. Nothing major or anything like that. I think I'm going to find today's interview really good. Better than good. Dave is really, he gets it, right? I only have people on here who get it. Because your time is precious. Our time is precious here. We have a small crew. We have so much to get to. And we can't float idiots on here and people who don't get it, because we're trying to help people understand how the game is played in D.C., how the game is played in your state houses. And take today's podcast and apply it to wherever you are, whatever state that you're in, to understand how your state government works and then how that applies to the federal government. Here's a little spoiler alert. They're all corrupt. Dave covered the state house in Pennsylvania as a reporter. Then he worked in the state house for the governor before he launched his own shop. I covered the state house in New Jersey. It's all the same. They talk about drain the swamp. What swamp? There's 51 swamps if you don't include places like Puerto Rico and other places. Right? There's a lot of swamps. It's not just one swamp. It's a massive swamp. It's a nightmare. So we're trying to shed some light on this stuff so you understand how the game is played. And we do that by bringing people who have been in the game for a long time and are willing to share their inside knowledge. And what more do you want? I mean, I give you guys a lot of inside knowledge on a daily basis. But you're like, yeah, this guy, I don't know about this guy. He's kind of a crackpot. That's like the feeling, I don't know why, with a lot of people. But, you know, time and time again, I'm right and I'm right and I'm right. And I never get tired. You know, if you're a competitive person, you never get tired of winning. You never get tired of being right. And from time to time, we do spike the football and rub people's face in it. And I'd like to get back to doing that in the new year. And I got a feeling we're going to be doing a lot of that. So, and I don't get tired of it. I don't care. You know, I said last night on the More Pain Show, this is like a blood sport. Politics and things. And you either have, you know, a taste for the jugular many times or you don't. And I do. And probably from the way I was raised. But first thing we'll do is shout out to the folks out there on TruePundit.com. Thank you for the traffic. We appreciate it. And also Patreon.com/TruePundit. And Subscribestar.com/TruePundit. That's where you get access, subscriber access, to the More Pain Show. Two other shows we're rolling out, like Pain After Dark. Also, the video podcast every day of Pain in the Morning. No ads on there. No ads on there. And usually get it uploaded long hours before it hits Apple. The podcast hits Apple and Spotify and all those places. iHeartRadio. So it's up hours early. If you, we're uploading around 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning most of the time. That's what we call Pain in the Morning. It's, people seem to like it. So you get the video podcast of that. And also, it's the best way really to help us keep the lights on. We did a story this morning, about people who are having trouble keeping the lights on. You know, the only way we're keeping the lights on is through people's generosity. The ads, people think that you're going to make millions of dollars from ads. It's a slow build, man. We just started this thing. We're like 8 months in on the podcast. We'll see how long it lasts. I have plans to get a little bit more radical as things continue to deteriorate. I got a little 1700s in me, man, believe me. Not just the hairstyle these days. I got a little 1700s in my blood. And my whole family lineage is the way we are. We're fighters, man. Fighters on all sides of the family. I don't know how these guys got together. My grandparents on both sides, but just fighters. Polish, Irish, German, scrappers. And This is the result right here. I am a product of my environment and my forefathers. And I got a lot of fight, and we're going to need a lot of fight. So we appreciate you supporting us on those platforms, patreon.com/truepundit, subscribestar.com/truepundit. We're not funded by millionaires and billionaires. And let's move on. Don't you forget about me, Simple Minds. Except I'm not looking for Simple Minds out here. I'm trying to get away from Simple Minds. Except the music. Yeah, Simple Minds and the Thomas Paine podcast don't get along together. We need bright people. We need bright people who can affect change in their own lives and beyond. Now, when I turned off the mics last night, and I was in post-production, I don't know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, the rumor was swirling around that a lot of things were swirling around. One, I'm not even going to mention the reporters because it's like these guys get enough press. One guy was retweeted a number of times by the president last night. He's talking about a story, says it's developing, that FBI officials are going to release evidence, you know, incriminating evidence on other people if they're ever indicted for the Russia collusion spying, Trump spying thing. And I'm thinking, I got off. We did the More Pain show, 2 hours, 2.5 hours. Then I did Pain in the Morning, hour and a half. And I'm reading this stuff because I'm usually wired up after talking about this stuff. My blood. If you heard me this morning, you'll know that my blood pressure was through the roof. Pain in the Morning today, Wednesday. I was like ready to blow a tube at some of these stories and think the ridiculousness these politicians are throwing at us on a daily basis and whittling away our constitutional rights on a daily basis. And nobody really seems to care. I mean, collectively, there are pockets of people who give a crap, but collectively. But I read this stuff and I said, the story's developing that FBI and CIA types are going to release evidence if they're to compromise other people, like, you know, rat out government secrets and of the rich and famous, like the Clintons, etc., if they're indicted. And then the president retweeted that. So I said, we did a story on this. We broke this story. What are these people talking about? It's developing. I went back into the archives and found January 22nd. Right? That's 10 months ago. That's pretty good, right? 10 months ago, we scooped something that's developing now. It gets even worse. January 22nd, 2019. It's almost 2 years ago, okay? The headline is blackmail. A disgraced FBI officials threatened to release Wiener's laptop evidence exposing the Clintons and others if indicted. And you can go read that. It's on. Go find that on Twitter or on True Pundit. High-ranking FBI officials believe disgraced and fired FBI leaders are using the evidence from Anthony Weiner's laptop to stay out of prison. That means copies of Weiner's hard drive, which contain damaging evidence against Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin and others, are floating around Washington, D.C. and who knows where else. The ultimate get-out-of-jail-free card, damaging dirt on the Clintons, and blackmail and extortion used by leaders of the once great law enforcement agency. A new low. And it goes on and on and on. The details further, and you can read that. But, I mean, it's coming up on 2 years. Guys, if you're reporters out there and you say something is developing, maybe do a search. Maybe have some respect for the pioneers. Otherwise, you're just embarrassing yourself. 2 years. Again. 2 years. No credit. No problem. We got you guys. You guys are listening. You guys get it. It's just insane. Then, after I looked up that debacle, and I made sure, because sometimes these things drive me crazy. I see things. I'm like, I've seen that somewhere before. Then I think, yeah, well, where else would you have seen it? Except your site. We wrote this. We covered this. We broke this. It's totally crazy, okay? After that, the rumors swirling around, and I talked about it at the end of the show on patreon.com/truepundit. Subscribestar.com/TruePundit. The Pain in the Morning show, I put a little extra segment at the very end saying that there was a rumor swirling when I got offline last night that Christopher Wray was going to resign. And from these secret agent Twitterazzis who have inside DC sources, I mean, I said, let's see what happens. I'm throwing it out there because it's late night. And by the time I wake up from my podcast stupor, the story could have already broken. But this morning we log on and we find out that, let me get the stories on True Pundit. You're going to have to start going right to True Pundit because I think our days on social media are dwindling, either by their hand or my hand. And we'll have more to talk about that after the election. We're just biding our time up to the election, believe me. There's a lot of changes coming. And I don't fear change. So you should not either when it comes to us and what I plan to do and where we plan to go. So we wrote the story this morning, about an hour ago. FBI's Wray is defiant. I am not going anywhere, Mr. President. FBI Director Christopher Wray has no plans to resign. FBI official said as President Donald Trump and his supporters step up demands for the release of sensitive files that they say will show spying on Trump's 2016 campaign. Wray is here to stay regardless of what President Trump's comments, FBI officials confirmed Wednesday morning. And we picked that up from other news organizations as well. So the secret agent men and secret agent ladies on Twitter with all their connections. Be careful what wildfires you start. You do have a responsibility out here to get things right. And you should take it seriously because people do follow you. They might not be very bright people, but they follow you. You should be more responsible, man. It's not a game out here. At least to me, it's not a game. Well, we like to get things right. That way there's no messy cleanups, no messy putting out fires. We're throwing a lot of content at you. I hope you're learning things along the way. Secret Twitter man. Intel from a garbage can. Yeah. Okay, look, here's the deal. We got Dave Latour, a founder of Latour Communications. He's a big heavyweight in Harrisburg. And everybody knows that Pennsylvania has been in the spotlight now with this maniac, Governor Wolf. I call him Governor Teen Wolf or the Wolfman Wolf, okay? And I never really understood what this guy's problem was other than the fact that he's a maniac. He's in the same category as Governor Cuomo in New York, who killed a lot of old people in long-term care facilities, nursing homes, during the onset of this COVID-19 thing. And he's been acting like a tyrant and a would-be dictator. Other than that, what's there to know about Wolf? But what he's done is he's brought and put a spotlight on Pennsylvania, just as Cuomo has put a national spotlight on New York, to show the people of this country, Americans, God-loving Americans, in many instances God-fearing Americans, giving them an inside look, a peek behind the curtain, so to speak, of how feckless politicians who put ideology before the welfare of their constituents and citizens, how that has an overall and dastardly and deadly effect on the country and on the state. And that's what Wolf has done. So why? What makes these guys tick? That's what we're going to, in part, talk about. Because Dave knows. He's been around. And as you'll find out, he's a very sensible, measured guy. And we go back to our fraternity days. He was one of the guys, fraternity president. And well, I won't spoil some of the fun we have during the conversation, but it's also It's also important stuff. Dave was former press secretary to Governor of Pennsylvania, and he began his career public service under Governor Tom Ridge, serving in the communications office, spokesman and chief speechwriter. Then he later moved to press secretary to Governor Mark Schweiker, and he was press secretary for Governor Schweiker during 9/11, as you will hear. He directed communications for the sixth largest state in the nation and successfully handled international press corps on a matter of different topics. That's he's been around. Now he has his own communications company. He specializes in public relations, public affairs, crisis communications. He's got a great reputation until now. Great reputation and well-regarded public affairs consultant, and serves as a media strategist and public spokesperson for a number of high-profile clients. We talk about some of those corporations, top corporations, Fortune 500, police organizations, law enforcement organizations, and so on. And without further ado, let's get into this interview. It's one of my favorite interviews. Keep outdoing myself. We had a good interview. The last one was good as well. And that's the name of the game. Try to broaden your intellectual horizons to try to help understand and help you understand what makes these maniacs tick who are in charge of our lives. And perhaps more importantly, why we put these maniacs in charge of our lives, or how they get in control. We're in a position to be in charge of our lives. That's even more interesting, and we tackle that as well, along with some other issues. I'll be back briefly after the interview. I called you. You're like, I'm on with the governor's office. Call me back. I'm like, governor, dude, I'm. What's happening?
How you doing, my man? I'm really sorry. It's been a crazy morning, and I'm trying to get shit done so I can set aside time with you. That's all.
No, I appreciate it, because it's taken a long time to track you down.
Yeah, you know me.
I've done a lot of clandestine recordings of you in the last. But we can't play them. That goes into the evidence vault.
That's right. No doubt.
I'll do a good intro of you before I roll the tape. So
sure.
So I won't be kissing your ass directly on here.
Thank you. I don't want that.
What's going on in Harrisburg, man? Of course, the spotlight now is on Pennsylvania for a lot of the country who didn't even know who this Tom Wolf was before this entire COVID-19 debacle started. So, and it's bad news for Wolf that a lot more people are watching him. Not that I'm sure that he cares, you say, but, What's the you've gone toe to toe with him, and I'll talk about that in your intro. You went toe to toe with him over what? The alcohol, and
went toe to toe with him over alcohol and his handling of the pandemic.
Right.
You know, his draconian measures to, you know, take over Pennsylvania in unilateral tyrant like fashion, you know, basically control everything that happens in the state, bypassing our constitution and equal branches of government. To make matters worse, they've stacked the state Supreme Court. So any suit that gets brought up against him, he immediately moves to have it put in the state Supreme Court. And he's won most of those cases because, quite frankly, Democrats have stacked the courts. They've been better at winning elections, judicial elections in Pennsylvania than Republicans, and it's really cost Republicans.
Yeah, and it's crazy. As a microcosm of just what goes on with tyrants like a guy like Wolf, and we see it spill over in New York with Cuomo and Jersey with Murphy and Michigan with Whitmer and so forth and so on. Even in federal court. Federal court came back and basically said that all these draconian measures that Wolf had implemented were unconstitutional, and I haven't seen anything change in Pennsylvania since the federal court decision. He doesn't even care. Right. They don't even care.
Right.
What's the story there? I mean, right. Look, you worked for as press secretary for the governor, and you worked under Governor Tom Ridge, and you worked under Mark Schweiker.
Sure.
So you've been in that office. Have you ever seen anything that's just like, well, just total disregard, at least from out here, looks like a total disregard for everything.
Well, what's interesting is we were in office during 9/11, when 9/11 happened. So, you know, we were dealing with situations where as the attacks were happening, we were worried that Three Mile Island might be a target because at the time we heard there was still a plane out there that unfortunately right. ended up being Flight 93 that crashed into the hills in Somerset County near Shanksville. So we had and there's an interesting comparison there because, again, probably not since 9/11 has the country been in such an uncertain state, Mike. I think you would agree. And our reaction at that time was to look for things we have in common with the state legislature, to work with the state legislature. There was never a time when the governor's office basically said, well, we're in an emergency. There was an attack on our country. There was significant damage in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. It's time for us to take unilateral emergency action and govern on our own. I mean, and let's face it, we were talking with an immediate terroristic threat. Nobody knew in the days after. Hey.
We were on a roll. Right. We were on a roll, and then the phone just cut out.
Yeah.
It's a good thing we pay all this money.
I can only imagine what that's all about. Was I that boring?
It's like, we got to go. Thanks for guest checking.
Hey, Dave, thanks. Give us the weather forecast. We got to go.
We got another call coming in. Bill Toth from Loretto, you're live.
Bill Toth.
Loretto, PA on the phone. Okay, let's pick back up because you were on a roll. You're talking about 9/11. Go ahead.
Sure, it was a different, you know, it was a very uncertain time, much like 2020. We didn't know what was coming. We didn't know if there were going to be more attacks. You know, our mainland had never been attacked so aggressively, certainly in modern history in the United States of America. And, you know, Pennsylvania could have gone the way that Tom Wolf did at that time, but Governors Tom Ridge and then went left for Washington, Governor Mark Schweiker. The thought was always about working with the legislature, coming up with ways that we can do things together for the betterment of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And for Wolf, it's basically been exactly the opposite. He and his numbnut bureaucratic staffers, you know, filled with a bunch of millennials with no lifetime experience, you know, basically sat in their ivory tower since March and declared who were the winners and who were the losers with very little oversight. And what makes matters worse is they also control the state courts in Pennsylvania. Our courts are, we don't have merit selection like we do at the federal level where the president nominates candidates for the judicial bench and they are confirmed or denied by the Senate. Our judges run for election, and unfortunately, Republicans have absolutely sucked at winning judicial elections in Pennsylvania. It's allowed the Supreme Court to basically be stacked with Democrats by a very comfortable margin. So anytime Republicans in the legislature, there's a lot of complaints of Republicans in the legislature don't do enough to combat Wolf. Well, you know, they've passed lots of legislation that he has then turned around and vetoed. You know, they've filed lawsuits, but once those lawsuits get to the state Supreme Court level, they lose because it's stacked with Democrats. Now, I will say that I think Republicans in the legislature, and I don't want to give Republicans in the legislature too much credit.
Right.
It's not exactly a collection of courageous people, but they have done by and large, they have pushed the governor on a number of issues, whether it's opening up, reopening the construction industry. We're the only state of the nation who was closed for construction during the lockdown.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, right. The legislature put a bill on his desk. He vetoed it. Then he turned around and opened it up himself. We've seen that pattern a lot with him. There's been a lot of pressure on, think about this dummy. He ignores protests. He ignores riots and looting. There was rioting and looting in Lancaster after a justifiable police shooting about a month ago. The governor's never said a word about it. In fact, no elected Democrats have. They're afraid to criticize rioters and looters, yet these same people enact and enforce draconian requirements that prohibit parents from seeing their kids play volleyball or football or golf or cross country. Hey, Mike, last I checked, cross country is a sport where people run away from each other and real fast. So if ever there was a socially distant sport, it's cross country, and yeah, parents aren't allowed to go see it. Now, today, as we do this interview, the governor just announced that he's relaxing indoor and outdoor requirements for attendance to events such as sports events and other types of events, which is kind of interesting when you think about it, because he just vetoed legislation from the legislature once again that would have allowed school districts to set their own attendance requirements. He vetoed it, said it was dangerous, but today he announces expanded attendance at outdoor events. So he just takes their ideas and says, I'm not going to work with you and you're dangerous, and then he employs them himself. And I would note, by the way, that this new policy came about a week after the president and owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Art Rooney, came out and said it's time to get fans back in Heinz Field. So, you know, he's ignored parents all these months, but, you know, a powerful family like the Rooney family said it's time to put people back in the stands of Steelers games. And all of a sudden, here we are with a relaxed attendance policy. He couldn't give a damn what parents think.
Yeah, and a powerful Democratic family like the Rooney family.
Right. I mean, let's not forget Mr. Rooney's father, Dan Rooney, was the ambassador to Ireland under President Barack Obama.
It's true. And
right. So when money and big Democratic money talks, Governor Wolf listens.
Which is crazy because, I mean, you and I are both Steelers fans. I made fun of the Eagles yesterday, right, on yesterday's podcast, or this, yeah, yesterday's podcast in the morning. I said that, I don't know what
deservedly.
And there's so many, from Catholic school to public school, to little tykes to like Burt Bell and little football programs like that. So, some of the small football programs just canceled. Completely canceled, right, for the season. And I was like, are you kidding me? So I got a little nephew. You know, I got a big nephew playing D1. His season's,
right,
been scrapped.
Done.
I got a little nephew, 9, 10-year-olds. We go to the games. We're not supposed to go to the games. Only one parent can go to the game. The parents can't watch the practice. I go to the practice. I go to the games. If anybody gets in my way, they're going to get dropped. It's like, I'm going to go watch the kid play football, right? And
right,
and parents like sit in the car from like 100 yards away, 100 feet, and they like watch through. I'm like, get out of the car, grab a chair, sit on the grass, watch your kid play.
Right?
Are you kidding me? You listening?
I can't even imagine what it'd be like in high school. My kid graduated 2 years ago.
Yeah,
my oldest child. I would have gone nuts if I couldn't see him at his sporting events. He ran cross country, he wrestled, he threw javelin for track. You would have had to arrest me to keep me away from a sporting event involving my kid. I know it's hard for millennial Democrats to understand just what the issue is for parents, but you know better than anybody, Mike, with being the father of two sons. It's you really invest so much in your kids and what they want to do. They want to play sports. They work so hard. They sweat. They suffer. They sacrifice. You know, these are real moments of growth for your children. And then people just act like, well, who cares? It's just sports. It's just your kid. There's bigger things to worry about in life. Well, not to those kids, you know. And you know, some of the greatest moments of my life as an adult were spent watching my son wrestle and watching him achieve success and to realize his dreams at that stage in his life. And you can't get those back. If I had missed those, they would have been holes, I think, for me, you know, forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for them to just say, it really doesn't matter, you parents are overreacting. Well, then you know those people basically aren't parents. You know that they don't have kids, they haven't seen kids sacrifice, and they haven't felt and looked at everything their kids went through to get to that point. So, you know, and Tom, you know, again, Tom Wolfe, he could have cared less. It wasn't an issue for him, and it wasn't an issue to the young millennial Democrats in his inner circle that just don't seem to care about what ordinary people want to do. And let's not forget, Mike, for weeks and weeks, the governor selectively enforced this stuff. So, you know, parents couldn't go see their kids play a football game, but thousands of people can pack in the stands at dirt track races all throughout Pennsylvania. I got no problems with people going to dirt track race. I've got no problems with it at all. You know, and if you want to go to a dirt track race, go have a good time, enjoy yourself. But why do they get to go and parents can't watch a football game? This selectively enforced BS is going to hang, or is going to hang around like an albatross around Wolf's neck, you know, for the rest of his life. When they write his political obituary, there's going to be lots of criticism about how this guy picked winners and losers, and the winners and losers were based on politics, political science, not actual science.
Wow, you're really good at talking. No, you're right. But
I've had lots of months to be angry. I've never been this angry. I'm not, honestly, you know, you and I have known each other for years. And, you know, I do
decades.
A talk show.
Known each other for decades.
Decades. I do a talk show in Harrisburg. And I'm actually a political moderate. But, you know, I voted for Democrats in the past. I have friends who are Democrats. I get along with them. But, you know, this pandemic has moved people, has moved moderate Republicans to the right and moderate liberals to the left. And it seems like there's no in between. It's made everybody angry. And I put myself firmly in that category because I've just seen injustice after injustice from this governor and Democrats in Pennsylvania. By the way, Mike, Republicans have gained a 2-to-1 edge in new voter registration in Pennsylvania leading into this presidential election. Don't forget, Donald Trump won Pennsylvania by 44,000 votes over Hillary Clinton. So they've done an excellent job getting people registered. Part of that was because Democrats believed it was too dangerous, they said, to go door-to-door, and Republicans are reckless. Well, now that Republicans have such a decided advantage in new voter registration, Democrats are launching a massive door-to-door effort to cut into that advantage. So basically, it was dangerous when Republicans did it, but now it's not so dangerous because political science tells us we could really lose Pennsylvania. It's just that kind of hypocrisy we've seen since March that is just so infuriating for so many people that are trying to approach this virus with common sense.
Well, we looked at a lot.
I'll shut up.
You don't have to shut up. I mean, you have a lot of, you've been around this game for a long time. You were a former reporter. We'll talk about that before I do your intro. I don't even know if you want to admit that because with today's media, but you were an outlier, journalist, you know, I think
right.
You separated yourself from the pack really well. And that's the name of the game because the pack is fucking lost. You've been around this game for a long time. Do you notice what, and I've talked about it on this show, and I know you've listened from time to time. And before we do that, where can people find you on your podcast and on the radio?
Sure. They can tune into, I'm on the radio at WH5 WHP News Talk 580. It's based in Harrisburg. Our show is called Latour Live. You can listen to it. You can also download it on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app. And as you know, I'm quite involved on Twitter. You can follow me at David underscore Latour. It's at David underscore L as in Larry, A, T as in Thomas, O-R-R-E. I tweet about this stuff a lot, probably too much, Mike.
The plugs on here are 30 seconds or less. I might have to cut that out.
Fair enough.
It's really regimented. They got me on a tight.
Right.
That Latour guy really, I mean, you told him to give a plug.
That guy's really playing it up.
Dead Sea Scrolls over it. Well, you've been around the game for a long time.
Sure.
In politics, you know, on both sides now. Is there something different? I've said it. I'm not going to editorialize before I ask you the question. We've discussed it on here before. Do you think there's something different about people that gravitate toward this, guys like Wolf? And why are we stuck with all these guys instead of, like, I mean, you're a sensible guy. I could see if you, not that you ever would, and you've been very balanced and very measured, unlike, well, this goes back to our fraternity days, right? You were president of the fraternity, and then you have guys like me who are completely out of control, and you pull me aside and say, dude, you're out of control. And I'd say, and I'd be like,
I'd usually get my ass kicked for doing that shit too.
But. No, but I mean, so you're a measured guy. You would make a good politician because you're very sensible. So why are there not more people that are measured and balanced and sensible representing us? And instead we have this lot, and I don't want to editorialize too much. We have these types of people, and you've been around the game. What's your take on that? Am I off? That these people are kind
no,
of,
yeah. I don't think you're off, but the reasons are varied. You have people that come up as volunteers in the party at the very grassroots level, people that start when they're young, that really want to get into politics for all the right reasons. They put the signs in the yards. They, you know, they knock on doors. They hand out literature. They believe in the cause. You know, those people still exist and still run for office. And, you know, I think it would be unfair for me to say that everybody that represents us in Harrisburg is a low life or, you know, only out for themselves. There are some good politicians up there that try and do the right things. But other people, you know, they run for office. Like, well, let's just start with the governor. You know, he's a multi-gazillionaire. He's never had to balance a checkbook in his life. You know, he's fifth generation. I mean, hell, he lives in a town that's named after him, basically a mountain, Mike. It's called Mount Wolf. I mean, he lives on Mount Wolf.
Jesus.
Tom Wolf lives on an estate in Mount Wolf. So let's get that out. He wanted to be governor. So what he did when he ran during an open year. In Tom Corbett, Republican Tom Corbett's reelection year. Corbett was very vulnerable, not a popular governor. It was pretty clear that year that any Democrat that won, they could have elected a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and he was going to beat Corbett that year. So Tom Wolf, as a gazillionaire, wrote himself a check for $12 million in the primary. He cleared the primary field, beat them all up, won the nomination basically by writing a check, cruised to a general election victory over Tom Corbett, and that's how we got Tom Wolf. Now, you know, Tom Wolf is a cautionary table for Pennsylvania voters. I honestly don't think we take the governor's race all that seriously in the state. It's always the person with more money or who yells louder that tends to win the governor's race. We don't really look at it that much, and voter turnout isn't that significant in gubernatorial election years. And I think in a lot of ways, it's really hurt us. That's why we get guys like Tom Wolf. You know, Ed Rendell won because he raised himself $40 million. You know, as mayor of Philadelphia.
$40 million. Can you believe it? $40 million for a governor's race.
Still records. He's still, wow. You know, there's still records. I mean, and what we got was a liberal Philadelphia mayor who ran Pennsylvania for 8 years. And don't forget, there's 67 counties in Pennsylvania, okay? 13 million people. Ed Rendell only ever won, I think, 6 or 7 counties.
Yeah, it's insane.
Right, because that's all we need. He needed Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. So they turn out the vote. You know, he had a great, you know, GOTV effort, and nobody ever stood a chance against him because of all of his money, and he only needed to win Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. And that disenfranchised millions of Pennsylvanians in the so-called T, the middle of the state, which excludes Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. So this is how we get these guys. Money talks, and in a lot of local races, you know, you've got each caucus, the House Republican, House Democrat, Senate Republican, Senate Democrat. You know, they anoint who they think is going to be the next person. They pour a lot of money into that race, and then we get what we get. You know, so we think we have choices, but we really don't have choices. It all depends on who has the most money. Rarely. It does happen once in a while. But if you have the most money in a race, you are going to win that race, I would say, 8 out of 10 times.
So that's what we're stuck with. And
that's what we're stuck with.
It seems that model has been adopted all over the country, where if I look at the Pennsylvania, the map of Pennsylvania, the voting map, it's almost completely red except for little blue spots, right?
Right.
And if you look at other states, it's similar, like, with the exception of places like New York and things like that. But so these guys come in, these Dems come in and say, we don't have to win all these red areas. We just have to win these major metropolitan blue areas, and we're in.
Right. Thank God for the Electoral College, right?
At yeah, exactly. Level. Well, they want to get rid of that, of course.
Right. They want to get rid of the Electoral College so California and New York can basically tell us who our next president is going to be every 4 years.
Exactly.
You know, and it's insane. And, you know, we don't unfortunately have an Electoral College type mechanism at the state level, thus, you know, in Pennsylvania, we have strong Republican majorities because, like you said, most of the map is red. But we can't win statewide offices anymore. The governor, the governor's office, the auditor general, the attorney general, the treasurer. By the way, why we have a state-elected treasurer is beyond me, but that's a whole other story. All those offices are held by Democrats. And all those offices likely in November will still be held by Democrats. Maybe the Auditor General, since it's an open seat, open office, maybe the Republican, Tim DeFore from Dauphin County, wins it. But typically, the candidates with the most money and the most voters statewide, you know, because we have more registered Democrats than Republicans, they tend to carry the day in statewide elections. And I don't know how we stop it anytime soon.
Well, you've been together with a lot of these guys, and you had me on your show, and there were a lot of digging. Yep. You did a live show.
Right.
And you had the balls enough to invite me. Because it's like,
well, you know, to this day, people talk about it as being one of the best interviews ever done on the show.
So, that's right?
I loved having you on. By the way, just so your listeners know, it was my 100th show celebration. This guy shows up with his book, and people are asking him for autographs. I've never gotten an autograph request in my life. They're asking for this guy to sign his book, autograph his book. He's sitting there for like 20 minutes after the interview, signing books and handing them out. How dare you?
Most of those guys were my family I brought with me.
Lies.
try to rub it in. Yeah, but no, it was good. I appreciate the opportunity. And
sure. No, I loved having you
having on. Me on live. Anything can happen. And it was like regular radio, so I had to mind my P's and Q's, right? We had some fraternity brothers there kept saying, hey, why don't you get a couple tequilas before you go on? And I said, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
That'll never happen.
You know,
that'll never happen.
The FCC is in the parking lot right now. They're going to kick the door in next during the live interview. But you had a lot of dignitaries there. I was impressed. And you spent time with these
Republican
guys.
Republican and Democrat.
Yeah. You spent time with these guys on both sides of the aisle. You get these guys like separately. They seem like pretty good guys. But then when they get into this pack, it's, wait a minute, is that the dude I was just talking to? Because I just watched him on the news and he sounds like he's a little bit unhinged. Well, what goes on with that? Am I imagining that?
It's all about power, right? No, it's all about power, right? It's all about, hey, look, we're all friends behind the scenes. See, that's the big joke. And you get it. And a lot of other people get it. These guys, they go on cable news. They argue with each other. They fight. Behind the scenes, they're friends. And, you know, if they're consultants, they're passing clients back and forth, right? They're if they're politicos, if they're elected officials, they're yelling at each other. And then when the mic's cut, the camera goes off, they tell each other, good job.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's just, you know, it's all a game until people realize that both parties play politics. I mean, this is what gets me. Republicans aren't afraid to criticize their leadership. I firmly believe that. They criticize their leaders. They're not afraid. Democrats fall in lockstep with Democrats, with Democratic elected officials. Barack Obama, according to Democrats, walked on water. But you can find a lot of Republicans who are critical of George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, even Ronald Reagan, and certainly Donald Trump. Democrats, they don't seem to get the joke. And the joke is there really is only one ruling political party. And they just fight like brothers and sisters over who gets the biggest share of the dinner at the dinner table. That's it. Who gets the biggest piece of the pie for dessert? It's really one party in Washington. And it's just the way it is. And people act like they really care about us, and they don't. They just divide us, you know, and nowhere is that. And I really see that a lot with Democrats in this election cycle, especially with the attacks on police and law enforcement that are just absolutely shameful, absolutely shameful. Defunding the police. Joe Biden was just on TV last night saying psychologists and psychiatrists should be going on 911 calls with police. So when a police officer gets shot, so we're going to have two people shot instead of just the police officer, because these are dangerous situations. You know, and Democrats, they just nod their heads and say, that's right. That's right, Joe Biden. That's right. Yeah, we totally agree with you. We need more psychologists on site. Okay, psychologists are going to talk a gun out of somebody's hand as they're about to shoot them.
Yeah, it's ludicrous.
It really is. So for me, I think Republicans are much more, I've always maintained this, much more critical of their leadership. Democrats think they are – Democrats – not only that, it's a feeling they have about themselves that they project onto their elected officials. They think they are doing everything for the right reasons. They want to do everything for the right reasons. They want free things for everybody. They want to help the poor, blah, 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 blah. So they project that onto to their elected Democrats. What they don't realize is their elected Democrats don't care. They will say anything to win an election. And Republicans in many ways are the same way. You and I both know with this Supreme Court nominee, if this nominee was an Obama appointee, because we saw it 4 years ago, this was an Obama appointee, Republicans would say, wait until after the election. Democrats would say, we have to do it now, right? And they just switch sides. It's just one party, a bunch of people sitting at a table, families sitting at a table saying, I want the biggest piece of pie tonight. That's all it is. And people act like it's party against party, and it's not.
What's the game? Divide us so that we're distracted and we don't say, hey, you guys are ripping us all off. That's not cool. Is that what the game is?
That's exactly right. I think in a lot of ways it's divide us. Let us focus on these big issues. You know, like people want to talk about police brutality, although I think our police are incredibly brave and heroic. All of a sudden, there's systemic racism in our police departments. They talk about racism. They talk about, you know, other issues related to COVID. Meanwhile, there are 1,000 critical issues taking place in Washington right now that nobody knows anything about that is changing the way our country works every single day. And, you know, you've got these large tech companies like Google, right? Who are basically able to do anything they want in this country because they are able to affect change at the lobbying level And nobody pays attention because everybody's focused on the big shiny ball, the big orb up there, which is racism or the pandemic. You know, how can we blow everybody's heads up today about something stupid Donald Trump said? You know, it just, there's so many things going on behind the scenes that we don't know that Republicans and Democrats support in a bipartisan fashion, yet we only ever hear about the differences because that's the stuff that sells.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, that it does sell. It's
right.
I really think after getting back into journalism after a long hiatus, as you know, I didn't realize it because I was a kid, really. 24, 25, 26, you're like a kid. But now I see it as, how can we press the people's button? I think journalism is this today. And I try to avoid it, but sometimes it is unavoidable. How can we press people's buttons today? Not really tell them anything, but piss them off enough to be engaged. And what is the outrage of du jour, so to speak? What are we going to do today to get people to notice us over here? Because it's so crowded out here in the media. It's insane. And that's the daily mission for a lot of these journalists.
Not only is it insane, but it's so improper. I mean, guys like you and me, I could never get away with that. My last job as a reporter was 2001. So going on 20 years ago. To watch these reporters today put their opinion into stories, subtly put, they're writing essays now. They aren't even straight news stories. They talk about Trump in opinionated ways. I could never get that past an editor 20 years ago. You know, they all have Twitter accounts, and to them, it's all about the power of Twitter and their ability to say things. You know, I know a reporter, I won't mention this reporter's name, who had over 500,000 people following them on Twitter, but it included crazy people who threatened this reporter's life routinely. This reporter had to call the FBI for help, federal law enforcement, because threats were coming from all around the country. This person was a conservative reporter, by the way, I will say that. And another reporter called this reporter to do a story on why they deleted their Twitter account. And the reporter doing the interview actually asked this reporter, how could you give up all that power?
Wow.
I mean, and it shouldn't be power. It shouldn't be power at all if you're a reporter. You're providing information. That's not power. You're supposed to provide information, let people decide. But these kids that come up through these awful J schools, by the way, I never went to a J school. I don't know if you did. And I think I was a better journalist from not going through J school.
Yeah, I went to J school. But what I was flabbergasted by is just my classmates were like, now, see, I was working at the time. As you know, I got thrown out of college.
That's right.
And I went back to college. So I was a working reporter when I went back to college to pay for my sins at our fraternity house. I was working full time and going to school full time, right? And I'm looking around at these kids. They were only a couple years younger than me, but I'm like, these kids don't have it. They're very impressed. They're almost like robots. Like, you know, when you're in the room with somebody who has it, so to speak, in quotes, it, whatever it is, speaking, sports, journalism. Right. Politics, you're like, whoa, that guy or that woman has something special, right? These kids were nothing. They were duds. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be working with these people.
That's exactly right. It drives you nuts, doesn't it?
It's insane.
And you can see all that coming to fruition now as, you know, these millennial reporters start taking over the New York Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer. I mean, formerly great newspapers. And they're just dictating this whole new set of standards that are not journalism. You know, if you want to write your opinion, go start a website, right?
Yeah, exactly.
These guys are straight newspaper writers that are, supposed to be straight news writers that are doing things that are so unethical, and they get cheered for it. And the old guard, people like you and me, who somehow I got out of the racket 20 years ago, thank God, you figured out a way to monetize it. I give you all the credit in the world. But, you know, these guys today, they just, they do what they want. They say what they want. And then the guys that are our age that are still holding on, you know, they're dinosaurs, and they do some pretty common, professionally accepted edits. And all of a sudden they're out of a job because people are outraged. And guys like you and me are going, well, what did that guy do wrong?
Yeah, they want to remove all the outliers and movers and shakers. The only way to be successful as a startup in this business without any millionaire and billionaire backing, and there's very few people in independent media that can make it without a massive bank account to work from and not their own,
right,
is to be completely exceptional to the point where people are like, whoa, who is this guy? And that's the only way you can make it, because word of mouth will spread. I compare it to back in the day, like in Nashville with country music. There are all these country music heroes, and this is like 30 years ago, 40 years ago. All these country music heroes, right, they get contracts and stuff. And there's this one dude playing in Texas and Arizona, playing all these one-night stands, honky-tonks and stuff. And they wouldn't give him a record contract. And that was Waylon Jennings. And he's like, I'll play the honky-tonks.
No kidding.
I'll play 5-6 times different places in a week. And we'll travel around 2 or 3 states, you know, Texas, West Texas, Arizona. And eventually, word will spread. And he got so good. He was so good, and he got so big, they had to give him a contract. They're like, at this point, it's stupid. Because people are like, how come this guy's not on a record? Right? So that's almost how you have to be as independent media. You have to be like Waylon Jennings, where people can no longer ignore you and the mainstream can't ignore you, because the mainstream doesn't like when somebody shows up and they're better than them. They just don't like it. They're like, wait a minute, we can't control this guy. This guy's out of control. And how's he getting all this stuff? So that's kind of the way I compare it. But if you're not a robot, it's tough. It's a tough stretch out here, man. It's a tough stretch. For sure.
And that's where, you know, I've always admired your ability to succeed. I mean, what you've done with your site and through social media is unprecedented. And your show, by the way, is just absolutely unprecedented. You know, like, I've got this little podunk radio show in Harrisburg. All of a sudden your podcast is showing up on top 20 lists, you know, nationally. And that speaks to the exceptionalism. You know, I hate to say this to your listeners, but it's true. You know, those of us who have known you for decades know you're just a fucking genius. I think you're an insane genius sometimes. But, you know, that's, I think, what's part of your charm and what has made you so successful is you think in ways that a lot of people don't. And quite frankly, I've learned a lot from you just watching and listening.
Well, with those kind sentiments, I was just notified we are able to extend this segment another 2 hours. It was weird. It came across the screen, you know. Hey. Hey, man, I appreciate that, because you're like, you know, you're in a class by yourself to be able to do what you've done in Harrisburg. And you represent a lot of serious concerns. Your clientele is massive, and part of that clientele is law enforcement. Okay, so I don't know if you're comfortable mentioning the places that you represent as a spokesperson and crisis management, media strategy, and things like that. You don't have to if you don't want to, but I know you have a lot of law enforcement clients, big law enforcement clients. And what my question is, what is the feeling with the inside feeling with that clientele about all these recent attacks on law enforcement?
You know what's crazy about it? Police officers don't change. They're still police officers at the end of the day.
Right.
There isn't a one that I've talked to who would say, hey, look, they may not agree with me. They may not like me just because I wear a badge, but I'm getting up tomorrow morning and I'm going to work and I'm ready to lay it all on the line. And to a person, they say that. to a person. It's not even an issue. You know, okay, you hate me. Fine. There's plenty of people that hate me. I'm a police officer. You know, I think it sort of comes with the territory with these guys and gals, I have to say. But they really just love doing their job. You got to be born to be a cop. Like, that's what a lot of people don't understand. They, you know, a lot of politicians do these, you know, we got to do recruiting campaigns. We've got to bring in, you know, but to have a more eclectic mix of police officers and blah, 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 blah. And I guess sometimes that works, but what people don't really understand is if I've talked to 100 police officers, 98 will tell me they've always wanted to be a cop. And that's just a fact.
Yeah, look at right? Look at Tony Del Duca. You know Tony.
Right. Another fraternity brother.
Yeah, I mean,
a guy who loves what he does, you know, and isn't going to let anybody stop him from doing what he loves. Right? Nobody will stop Dukes from doing exactly what he wants to do. And that's the way it is with a lot of police officers. I don't know one police officer is like, I'm getting out of law enforcement because people don't like me. You know, and think about what a superior human being you have to be, Mike, to stand there at a protest while people call you every name in the book and get nose to nose with you and you don't react. I would absolutely freak out and club somebody.
Yeah,
and
it's
I would.
Tough.
I'm a hothead. I absolutely would. These people are so professional. And then they go home. They, you know, kiss their wife, kiss their kids. They get up in the morning, they eat breakfast, and they go and do it again. And we're criticizing these people. We're telling these people that they're systemically racist, whatever the hell that is. It's just unbelievable. You know, it's just unbelievable. And they'll do it day after day after day because it's what they've always wanted to do as a kid, and they believe in the mission. And that's what I hear all the time from law enforcement and PA. And you know, quite frankly, they're even open, Mike, to talking about ways to improve their practice. You know, I have a friend of mine in the state, Pennsylvania State Police, that says, you know, we've changed through the years. We've gone from horseback to helicopter. That didn't happen because we were resistant to change. It happened because we know there's always an opportunity to get better. And so people would be surprised how open-minded police officers are to, you know, improving how they do their jobs, improving how they interact with the public, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there certainly are some things they disagree with, and they won't hesitate to say that, you know, we think it might be dangerous if, you know, you want to bring a psychologist along. You know how many police officers get shot just serving bench warrants every year or just breaking up a domestic because there's a crazy spouse who is flipping out and just walks outside and shoots a cop for no reason? You mean to tell me a psychologist is going to help in that situation? No, you're going to have two dead people, quite frankly.
Yeah, you never know what you're walking into. You never know what that person, if it's a target or if it's somebody who's ancillary, just happens to be there with the person. You never know what they're going through, what their last 24 hours has been like. They might not have any sleep for days. They could be wired on something. You don't know what, and you're going to put a civilian in there? That's going to, excuse me, sir.
can I talk you down?
Can I have a word with, step back, officer. Can I have a word with you, sir? Oh, that's going to go
hey,
well.
Sir, could you please put down that gun? I'm a psychologist.
Sir, if I may say so, you are acting erratically and it's unacceptable. Yeah, okay.
Hey, maybe we could go inside. Maybe we could go inside and have some tea. What do you think?
Yeah. Did anyone ever tell you you're being insubordinate? You know what that means, sir? You mean it's unacceptable.
Tell that to some guy wearing a white beater, high on speed in Clarion County, holding a shotgun.
Why do you got to pick on Clarion County? Why you
gotta... I know. I just pulled it out of my ass.
It's a good county to pick
another
on.
County.
What are they going to do
pick
about
another
it?
County. Clearfield County. All right, let's do Clearfield.
If it wasn't for Interstate 80, no one would ever go to Clarion County.
Amen. Amen.
But the cops, right? Do they get pissed off?
People.
They get pissed off at this stuff, or they just kind of brush it off like, well, you know, this is the way it is.
I think, well, they don't show me that they're pissed off. And again, that goes back to loving what they do. If you're willing to pull over a car on the turnpike with nobody around you for 40 miles in the middle of the night, a sketchy car, and there's a potential issue, you got to really love what you do. I wouldn't love to do that. You can't pay me to do that, right? These guys love what they do, you know, and it's more and more. I see more women wearing a badge these days than I ever have. And I've worked with law enforcement since 2003. So going on almost 18 years when we flip the calendar, I mean, they really dig it. They enjoy it. They've wanted to do it since they were kids. I mean, we don't know how lucky we are to have them. Everybody's talking about hating cops and defunding the police. Jeez, we're so lucky we have them. They are the thin blue line. Everybody talks about the thin blue line. They are the ones that protect us from anarchy.
That's true.
As long as there's not a Democratic politician in the way that refuses to allow them to act, you know, like we see in Portland. By the way, you know, you had a riot breakout in Lancaster. Cops arrest people. District Justice gives them $1 million each in bail. Guess what happens? No more riots in Lancaster. These dumbasses out in Portland, Oregon, they don't charge anybody. So every night cops arrest people for violence, attempted murder, you name it. They don't charge them, release them. The next night these idiots are back doing the same thing.
Well, we know you don't play games in Lancaster. I think the country found that out too. It's not just a Zook Stoltzfus out there selling barns. they just don't play games. It's like, well, we're not going to do that. We're not going to have you burn down our city this month. So you're getting locked up. And what happened with all those people? They're like, oh, we're leaving. This place is crazy.
Let's get out of here. They actually arrest you.
There's not even a Starbucks. There's no Starbucks.
They set really high bail here.
Yeah. I mean, it's... When I did your live show, talking about law enforcement, I was sitting there while you had other guests on. I was looking around the room. It was packed. And I said, there's a lot of cops in here. I think fucking Latour set me up. This is a sting. I think he set me up. No, but I can tell. And I said, there's like a lot of cops here. And they have a little gray. And I said, these aren't street cops. These guys are like probably high-ranking people. So, I mean, I think that based on that observation, and I work a room mentally when I go into a room, based on that observation, they obviously appreciate your representation and what you do for them.
Sure.
and how you help them. So it's I wanted your perspective on that because you have an insider's perspective. Most of the people in the media, they don't know what's going on. That's the thing that kills me, Dave. They don't even leave their desks.
They don't even know. They don't know a cop. They don't know how these guys do their job. They don't understand the rules of engagement. You literally, in Lancaster, the situation where the insane person runs out of the house with a knife over their head, charging at a cop. The cop is running backwards, not trying to engage. And finally, the guy's catching up to him, and he shoots him. Okay,
there were literally
libs out there saying this guy should have shot him in the leg. Okay, you don't know what the guy's hopped up on. We see all the time that people get shot or wounded, or they get tased, and they don't even react to it, and they go on to kill a police officer in traffic stops. You know, I can't remember where I saw the video. I think it was in Missouri. Two officers trying to arrest a guy. They tase him in the car. The taser doesn't work. They're wrestling with him. The guy gets a gun. He shoots both cops, kills one of the cops. But people don't realize that tasers don't work all the time. They don't realize that just because you shoot somebody in the leg, it's going to stop them. There's only one way to stop them, and that's center mass.
That's what you're taught. I mean, we had the podcast with Tony. It's one of the things he said. He gets outraged when people say, why don't you shoot him in the leg? He like laughs. He's like, you people are insane. You have no idea what you're talking about. You're dummies. You're literally dummies out there. And you can't stop shooting them in the leg. First of all, they're already moving at you, right? It only takes like one step. when someone has a knife, they don't realize you can close 10, 11 feet on some person with one step, which is really two steps, right? Because you got two legs. That's it. It's like 1.5 seconds if you do the training. It happens so fast. Shoot him in the leg. Why?
Shoot him in the leg.
Shoot him in the leg.
How many times have you seen, like I've seen on TV, and I think more police departments should do this, they offer citizens or community leaders an opportunity to come in and handle scenario training. And literally to a person, those people come out going, I didn't realize how difficult it was. I didn't realize how fast things happen. You know, we're breaking down shootings in slow-mo, extreme slow-mo, acting like this cop has 20 minutes to decide what to do. It just doesn't work that way in real life. But, you know, at the end of the day, though, Mike, you know, we get into another area where you say, a lot of people do know that. They don't care. It's just politics to them. It's just politics. They want to win. They want to win the Oval Office. They want to take over Congress. So they cite systemic racism and say our police officers need change. And Joe Biden says, wouldn't it be better to send a psychiatrist out with cops? First of all, how do you even do that, Mike? How do you get psychiatrists out there with police officers? What psychiatrist would say, hey, let me stop charging people $300 an hour for my services and go out on police calls? And what taxpayer-funded entity is going to afford all these psychologists and psychiatrists? You're actually going to reduce the number of police officers to do this? Because last I checked, crime isn't going down.
What he discounts and what the Democrats discount, and I'll say this, cops are street psychiatrists. You know, we talk to a cop.
That's a really good point.
When we talk to Del Duca, now I know this too. You have to read the street. See, that's the difference between like street cops and FBI. FBI are not street cops, and the FBI doesn't even like street cops. If you're a good street cop and you apply to the FBI, they're like, yeah, put that over there in that pile because we don't need. No, I'm serious. They do. They say we don't need guys who know the streets. We don't need really, really smart street people because we want to take people and we want to mold them in the way we want to. We don't need somebody who, while we're molding them, to say, hey, this is stupid. This doesn't work on the street. Well, they don't need those people that are wise to the way it works. But Del Duca says, I don't forget the episode, one of the episodes we did recently, and it did really well. He says, I painted a scenario where he gets a call. I have a knife. It's like a domestic call. Yeah. I'm in the street. I have a knife. And, you know, it started at home. He says he gets out of the car. He's immediately assessing, how do I approach this guy? Do I talk to him? What do I say to him? He's reading everything, body language. He's reading mannerisms, behavior. And then he's taking 25 years of being a street cop, and he's running it through that filter of his experience and the experience of other street cops, by the way, that he works with. And he's immediately assessing. So he is a street psychiatrist.
Right.
You can't tell me you take some Poindexter who has people sitting in a chair or laying on a couch, and they go out on the street and they see how some of these maniacs act and react, and they're going to be able to just on the fly.
Hey, we need a psychiatrist over here.
Yeah, they're going to be like, whoa, these people are crazy. I mean, they don't have the experience. They don't have the experience of the street. So, like you said, that's just like political speak, man. It's not even real. It's like, it's fantasy land to put pedestrians with, or civilians, professional civilians with cops.
The only way I could see it work is if you actually train police officers to be those psychologists or psychiatrists. And by the way, they're carrying.
Right.
I mean, you actually have to bring them up as a separate or as part of a department and, you know, part of a unit, like you would have a CERT unit, you know, you've got the drug interdiction unit. This would be a unit of people that would be, you know, trained to deal with those situations, but they also have a gun and they can put somebody down. And, you know, what you hear from Democrats is a bunch of lolly bullshit. You know, you're never going to have psychiatrists out in the field who aren't armed and prepared to protect themselves. So stuff like that is years away. So if you're going to be practical about it, you know, you're going to have people that are like Tony Del Duca, highly trained, highly motivated, skilled in talking to people. But if worse comes to worse, they're going to put somebody down. You know, this isn't a situation where we're going to send out, you know, some guy with a smoking pipe and a smoking jacket out there to talk to people and talk them down.
The whole notion is insane. Even when I rode with Tony, I rode with Tony a couple of times. He said, dude, whatever you do, don't start your shit.
Right.
Don't start trash. Don't.
Tony's pretty brave to have you out with him. That's all I
got. He said before he went out, I said, what do I need to know? He goes, don't start your shit. Don't start your trash talking. Don't use your sarcasm on these people. Don't tweak.
He was more scared of you than the criminals.
Said, don't tweak these people. Please don't tweak these people. Just let us handle stuff. Just be quiet. Be quiet and observe. And don't be you for 4 or 5 hours. Please, don't be you.
It's so funny.
I couldn't avoid it, though. I was still an asshole.
Right, of course.
You know, but
he knew it the moment he took you.
Yeah, in a fun way, though. You know, I didn't really... I'm just like, it's almost like when Dog the Bounty Hunter arrests people and then he gives them a life lesson speech. You got to turn yourself around, man. You got to find the Lord. You got to wise up. These people are like, it's 3 a.m. in Newark. Okay. Yeah, there's no religion at 3 a.m. in Newark. What else you want to talk about before we put a cap on this? And we'll bring you back on, too. I have one final question, but... I'm going to wait and hold that because it's a prophetic question. Anything else you want to throw out? You want to talk about that's on your mind?
No, I just think that, you know, this is going to be an interesting presidential race. It is fascinating, the Trump derangement syndrome with the DC media. And I don't put local media in that classification, Mike. I think there's a lot of good, having been one, there's a lot of good local reporters out there trying to do the right things. These national media folks are just insane. I mean, just absolutely insane. And I think they could help put this guy over the top again. You know, I think Trump would be cruising to reelection if it weren't for the pandemic and his big mouth. If he just could just dial it back a little bit. You know, I think this race would be over long ago, but it's not, and here we are. But I still think that, you know, all this attacking on Trump could really backfire just like it did in 2016. What people don't understand about Trump voters is they feel like he is them in ways that they never had somebody representing them in the Oval Office. You know, they always felt pandered to. And it'll be interesting to see, because now we're seeing Biden has a quote unquote 16-point lead in a national poll, even though we don't nationally elect a president. We elect them by state through the Electoral College. So I'm gonna be fascinated to see just how close this race is. I think it's narrow. Whoever wins, I think it's that close. And I think, you know, given the Democrats' sudden love of mail-in balloting, I think we may not know the winner of this race for quite possibly a month after the election. So, you know, about 6 months ago when all hell is breaking loose, or maybe even 3 months ago, I was saying, just get me to Christmas. Well, it might be Christmas by the time we figure out who our next president is.
Which is crazy in itself.
Right. You know. I think people are bragging. People are saying, oh, yeah, we need mail-ins. Well, careful what you wish for, because I think it'll show a sizable Trump lead on election night that won't factor in a lot of mail-in votes. And it's slowly going to eat away at, you know, his lead. He's going to start freaking out. Democrats are going to freak out. People are going to want to know right away who their president is. And, you know, as we saw in states like New York, they still have mail-in votes unaccounted for. I just think we're setting ourselves up for a nightmare. I can't believe people trust our respective state governments, especially state governments who have never done mail-ins. They're trusting them to do everything right for one of the most important elections in our lifetime, certainly one of the highest turnout elections in our lifetime. I just think we're headed for disaster in November, and nothing is solved on November 4th, and we are in for the long haul trying to figure out who our next president is.
Yeah, you wonder how much chaos we can take as a country and why we keep setting ourselves up for, I mean, there are certain things, certain chaotic situations, which we have to weather out here, like COVID-19 and stuff, but you wonder, could we have done a better job? Now, they had a long time to plan this, okay? Couldn't we have done a better? Right. Couldn't they have done a better job?
But Mike, remember when the Obamacare website was coming out, and everybody said it's going to crash for months? Everybody said it's not ready. It's going to crash. It's not up to snuff. The Obama administration hired a lot of politically connected people to do it. People forget saying Obama actually did that. And what happened, Mike, when it opened up? It crashed. It was awful. Heads rolled. People got fired. Blah, 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 blah. We all saw the train wreck coming months away. We see it coming with mail-in ballots. It's coming. It is going to be a disaster in my mind, because we are actually counting on individual states, many of which have never done this, to pull this off without a hitch. Good luck. And then we've got Democrats, especially in Pennsylvania, gumming up the works. Like, now, as long as the ballot comes in, as long as it was postmarked before the deadline and comes in 3 days after the election, it counts. And oh, by the way, in Pennsylvania, you can't question the validity of signatures, and you don't have to have a postmark. How does any of that make sense? So as long as it's postmarked and arrives within 3 days after the election, but by the way, it doesn't have to have a postmark. And by the way, we can't scrutinize signatures. You could literally sign your ballot Mickey Mouse and it's not a problem. I just don't know what people are expecting. I don't know how they could possibly expect that we're going to know who our president is in the month of November. I don't see it.
Or whether it's even legit by the time they're done tallying everything.
Right. Look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not somebody who thinks that, and Trump's going to play that card a lot. But I think, surprisingly, Biden's going to play the card a lot, too, because when the election's over and it's all about counting votes and trying to figure out what the hell's going on, the gloves are off and Joe is not going to be Joe Nice Guy, right? Gore and W, when they were going through the hanging chads in Florida, if they could have gotten into a mud wrestling match to determine the next president, they would have done it. And these guys are going to go at it. And if we haven't seen anything yet. November is going to be so ugly. Unless it's a blowout one way or the other and mail-ins just don't come into account because somebody truly wins the election by 16 points, we are in for something that we've never seen and so typical of 2020.
Yeah, how much history can we pack into 1 year?
Oh, it's going to be brutal. We're going to be talking about this election and the failure of mail-in balloting for years.
Yeah, I talk a lot about our forefathers, not the 1700 guys, the founding fathers, but our forefathers. Your Italian sure. relatives, my Irish relatives, right. My German relatives, my Polish relatives, coming over here. Everybody stepped off a boat, working their way up, right. Struggling, provide for a family, and then they have a family, and here we are. We're only two or three people, right, away from when they stepped off the boat. It's not that. There's a comedian who says, we're only like two or three people from when it all first started. You know, it's not that long ago, really.
Right.
And
guess what those people did, Mike? Guess what they did? They voted. They actually went to polling places and voted.
They voted. Yeah. Yeah.
I know it sounds crazy. I know it sounds crazy today. You know, hey, by the way, you can socially distance and wear a mask and go anywhere except apparently to vote. That apparently is a problem. You can go protest in the streets, riot, loot. Do whatever you want. But hey, and that's not dangerous, by the way, but it's dangerous to go in person to vote. It's just another hypocritical Democratic stance. I mean, I criticize Republicans on their lack of consistency on mask wearing. You know, I'm a moderate. I wear a mask. I'm not a big mask proponent, but I basically wear a mask because I don't want to deal with the bullshit. right? I don't want to deal with the bullshit. And if it helps somebody feel safer, I'm okay with that. I've got no problem with that. But Democrats, they act like if you don't wear a mask, you're Satan. If they turn around, they don't say anything about protesters not wearing masks, not doing social distancing, no problems whatsoever. Reporters castigate Republicans for not wearing masks, and as soon as their camera goes off, they take their masks off. The biggest hypocrites in this whole thing are Democrats and their national media partners. And I know I sound like a conspiracy theorist when I say stuff like that, but they're hypocrites. They're absolute hypocrites. At least Republicans say what they think and live by it. Democrats act like they're holier than thou, and then they turn their back routinely on people that they criticize Republicans for doing the same type things of not wearing masks.
Well, I was going to save it for after I do the, I guess, I don't know what they call it, a bumper or something. I'm supposed to learn all these terms in broadcasting because I'm still a rookie at this stuff. But I'll just say it now. When I was in the media, I watched all these guys get plucked out of my newsroom and go to USA Today.
Right.
New York right. Times, Washington Post, and I'm saying, those people were fucking crazy, and they suck at their jobs. I'm breaking my ass. I'm right. breaking my ass here. National story after national story. Not easy to do when you work for a daily newspaper anywhere, and they're picking these maniacs out. It's like,
right?
And you look at these people, you say, that guy was crazy. He was like almost a communist. He hates the United States. He hates New Jersey, where I was. He hates everything. He hates being here. I think he hates being alive. Those are the guys that went to the big papers, the reporters and the editors. They were maniacs. They were almost communists, basically. This is right. This is in the 1990s. Right. And I look back at it and I say, that's who they take. It has nothing to do with talent. Just like I said about the FBI, they won't hire street cops. The big publications, they don't hire the talented guys who are rocking and rolling. They don't want guys like that to go in there and say, hey, you guys are all asleep. You're missing the big stories. They want people who are in their mold, who are parallel with their ideologies. That's what we have. So when you talk about the difference between, you said that there are good people in the local media that are different from the people in the national media. That's why the national media only takes lunatics.
I think you're right. I mean, and people that I think you and I both know, the people in newsrooms that played politics and, you know, kind of worked their way up being ass kissers. That's a lot of the people you see, I think, in DC newsroom, my experience interacting with reporters from DC. You know, I covered a couple national conventions as a reporter. I covered the inauguration of George W. Bush. You know, so I ran into a lot of these national cats, and they were dicks. They thought they were great, and they weren't.
Yeah, they think they're superstars.
You know? Yeah, they think they're superstars, and they're not. They don't even know how to write, you know? The best advice I ever got as a reporter, you know, I started out, I got my master's degree, you know, graduated from St. Francis, got my master's degree, and the only job offer I got was working for like a 20,000 circ newspaper making $14,000 a year. And I basically thought, wait, I did all this for this? And somebody gave me great advice, like, who do you think you are that you deserve a lot of money and a job at a big newspaper? If you're smart, you'll do everything at that little newspaper. Do it all. Write, edit, paginate, you know, which is a fancy word for designing pages, you know, cover every kind of beat you can, get to know how those beats work, get to understand government better, cover sports, do entertainment. And I did all those things, and it made me so much more prepared for my next gig. It was so right. But some of these kids, they come out today and they think they're owed a living, or these guys that end up at the New York Times, they are not better writers than local reporters that I know. And I got a lot of friends that are local reporters that I interact with all the time. Sometimes we agree on issues, sometimes we don't. But I'll put their chops up against anybody in D.C. any day of the week, period.
True. I mean, you nailed it. And that's what we get. We get a rigged media. We get a rigged media. Doesn't represent truth and justice and all that stuff. It represents something much different. One last question.
Sure.
And we appreciate, and I think our listeners are going to appreciate your inside intelligence. We took a straw poll of fraternity brothers.
Oh, God.
And we feel, since you went into media relations and consulting, crisis communications, okay?
Right.
And then your specialties are public relations and everything from speech and editorial writing and everything else, okay? But mostly crisis management. We feel that without us and you being the president of the fraternity and we preparing you for crisis after crisis with the university president and the university administration, that you wouldn't probably, you would be the shell of your former self without us. Without us.
What do I owe you guys?
Well, I'm going to get to that. And now we feel, because of that, and you have a successful business and you're doing well, that we are owed fraternity-based reparations. So I wondered your opinion. No, I'm joking, of course, but do you think that being in charge of a bunch of maniacs at such a young age prepared you for being and dealing with a bunch of maniacs at an older age?
It's so funny that you phrase it that way, because I've never really thought about that. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's been like 25 years since college, and like my 25 was 2 years ago. And you only remember the happy times, the fun times, the insanely fun times. I mean, the best thing I ever did was pledge that fraternity, because, you know, we're all lifelong friends. We wouldn't have known each other, you know? I mean, it was just the best thing. I think one of the best things I ever done, you know, on a personal level. Now you're making me think about all the times where we were getting kicked off campus and we're getting called to the dean's office and I had to prepare an argument and, you know, I had to talk to the dean about why we shouldn't be kicked off campus, and you have to deal with Saturday parties and police coming to the door and football players coming to the door want to start a fight because they won't pay $2 to get in. So, yeah, I have to say that my crisis management training had to start in Loretto at St. Francis College in the Alpha Phi Delta fraternity house. So you guys come up with a number for the reparations, and we'll start negotiations. How's that?
It's unacceptable.
Just give me a number then, right? No negotiation. Seriously, I've never had so much fun in my life. And what people may not understand about Greek life is there were guys that I didn't go to school with, you know, guys like Freak, who I met in later years, and we had such a blast just because we had Alpha Phi Delta income, you know? And man, those are some good times. And we still golf together. We hang out. We hung out, what, 2 months ago, was it?
Yeah.
We all got dinner one night.
Oh, that was the night where the restaurant kept hassling us to order food because,
because of COVID.
Because of COVID, we almost started a riot in that place. I talked about it on my show, and people, Dave, people were like, "Oh man, you're exaggerating. You guys,
you're not exaggerating.
I'm not. It was insane.
No, I think I ordered a dessert just so we could have another round, and the waitress literally came over to us and said, "All right, you guys can have one more round." But it was really a contentious issue, like. What are you talking about? Like, yeah, I feel bad for restaurants. They were put in a tough spot. Think about how screwed up Governor Tom Wolf is, only allowing people to be in a restaurant if they have food. You're actually telling a restaurant to chastise people for wanting to spend another couple hundred dollars for a round of drinks. Think about that. The restaurant is arguing against itself. You know, we want to give them, because how many guys are at that table? 10? We want to give them probably another $200 for a round of drinks, and they're actually arguing against us. That's 2020 in a nutshell, right? Because the restaurant in normal times would be like, you guys want five more rounds? We're in. You know, we'll stay open as late as you guys want. You know, we never make this kind of money on a Thursday night, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, situations only seem to happen like that when we're together.
Well, no, the funny thing is, I saw the owner like a week ago, right?
Yeah.
Of the place. And he said, where you been? You haven't come in for takeout. I said, I'm done. He's like, what are you talking about? You lost your job? I said, no. We're in there, okay? And this is what happened. Right. And he goes, come on back in and make it right. I said, nah, you know what? You can't make it right because this is how I see it. You sided with Wolf. When you opened your doors, right? You know, if I come in there with 10 guys, I don't work for the state LCB, and you're going to do like the letter of the law, and then you can't. I don't know. I'm different, right? I'd say, fuck it.
Makes sense.
Fuck it. We're rolling with it. We got a group of guys here. They want to hang out. They want to eat. They want to drink. I mean, we weren't being rowdy until the very end, I think. but I told them, I can't do it. I can't come in there and drop money because it doesn't feel right. In the time when people need to go out now with all the pressures, you added more pressure. That's not why people go out, my man. And this is not a place I want to go to anymore because of that. And I know it has nothing to do with you. You weren't here and stuff, right? That's great. But there's other places we could spend our money. And I went out just as I went out a couple nights ago in Joe Biden's hometown with my Citigroup guys, my Citigroup boss, and a bunch of guys from Citigroup in Delaware, in Centerville, Delaware, in Greenville, Delaware. Nobody hassled us about anything. Okay, so that's the difference between Delaware and Pennsylvania. It's like the restaurants, the guy was like, look, I even talked to the manager. He came over, thanks a lot for being here. I said, what's going on with the state regulations? You know what he said? I don't have the luxury of listening to the state regulations. We are in a desperate situation to stay in business. So if we don't shut down, if they don't shut us down, in other words, if I listen to them, we're going to be shut down. So why listen to them? You could try to make a go of it because they're working in a massive hole. They were closed and they still had to pay their people. A lot of guys like yourself, right? A loyal guy. Right. You're still going to pay some of your people if they're not working because you feel like, hey, I got to pay these people, right? I mean, this is like no joke. And then your money is depleted and then you know, that starts a downward spiral in many, many different areas for employers and entrepreneurs. And it's a bad situation they all put us in. And that's a microcosm, restaurants, bars and restaurants and hotels. That's a microcosm of the challenges that these tyrants, we talk about these people, these tyrants have put us in a bad situation. And it affects all of our lives. Like you said, people don't take governor's races seriously. You don't think they're going to take it seriously now?
Right.
I mean, how much of a beating do you want to take before you sit up and say, hey, I better vote in the governor's race? Am I right?
Right. No doubt. I mean, that's the thing about voters is they only pay attention in presidential election years. And if there's any lesson to be learned here in Pennsylvania, it's please pay attention to your gubernatorial candidate more than ever. You know, Tom Wolf is just some dumb rich kid, fifth generation dumb rich kid who had $12 million and took the governor's office. I would have taken 5 Tom Corbetts over Tom Wolf.
Yeah.
You know, and people just, you know, then people go, where'd this guy come from? Well, we elected him.
Twice.
We elected this guy. We allowed him to twice. We allowed him to buy the office. We allowed him to buy it. So, you know, here we are. I always say this, we get the government we deserve because we allow money to control politics instead of people looking at the candidates on their face. And, you know, we just don't do that enough. You know, we're the suckers, Mike. It's just that simple.
Wow, you're echoing a lot of the same sentiments that I've been saying, which is comforting since you are a very sensible, very measured person. And we appreciate your input, bro. David Latour.
Yeah, hey.
It was a pleasure having you.
My pleasure to be on.
Next time, you can drop a few F-bombs. It's going to be okay. Your clients will still like you.
I didn't fucking do that?
Ah. I got you
to
say it.
Yeah, it's kind of strange since fuck is part of my lexicon. I can't believe I didn't fucking say that enough.
It's because you're on the radio, man. When I was on your show, I was like,
fighting your lip.
One of my sons were there. I was going to say, I'm going to put this dog collar around my wrist. If it even gets close, just shock me.
I love being on your show, yeah. Man. And I love your show. And I do listen. And, it's so fucking
well, funny. You have what? How many shows do you have now? Like 120 or something?
What'd you say?
On your show, you're up to like 120 or what are you up to?
136.
136.
But I only do my show once a week. I don't want to do it any more than that. You've got more chops than I do. You know, you're going at this day by day.
Yeah,
and
well,
I give you a lot of credit. Yeah. People don't realize how hard it is. People don't realize how hard it is to talk about shit.
It's taken over my life.
Let alone have something to talk about.
Yeah, it's taken over my life. I'm like, God, we'll do like once a week. And then they say, why don't you do it
I remember
every
how
day.
You started. Now all of a sudden I'm like, this guy's now, he's got a morning pod. You know, I mean, what the fuck's going on?
It runs the show. It's like, what are you going to talk about? Are you going to be well rested enough? Is your voice going to be? I was out this weekend, as you know, with a couple of fraternity brothers, and they were like, "You're being really low key," and it was cold. And I'm like, because I usually get fired up, you know. And it was cold at night, a little bit cold. We were outside, and I had like a winter hat on, you know, in October. And they're like, "What are you doing?" I said, "Hey, man, my pipes are my life. Okay, my pipes are my life. I got to protect I got to protect the pipes. I can't get."
Hey, where'd you guys stay this weekend? Did you stay in that trailer? Stay in that trailer home?
It was out of control, man. I couldn't, you know, Tommy's the best, right? I went, we played cards. We're up and I did very well at cards. And we stayed there. And then I was like, I can't sleep here. I don't know what's going on. I got up in the middle of the night. I like drove home and I did the Irish exit, Dave.
I've told Tommy all the time, I said, if there's a 4-star hotel nearby, I'm in. Otherwise, I'm never going to that event.
You damn snob. Unbelievable.
Good talking to you, brother.
Thanks, brother. We'll talk again.
Hey, yeah, looking forward to it. Come on my show soon, okay?
Hey, whenever you want, you know. Just give me about 2 weeks. I have to get all the F-bombs out of me before I go on an FCC format.
You got it, brother.
Thanks,
take
man.
Care.
Take care.
See you, Mike.
See you, bye. Well, you heard it here. That's insight. That's insider's insight. That's different from the Twitterazzi. And well worth its weight in gold when you talk about somebody who's been around. Smart people who have been around. Intellectual people who have done things, built things. They've been around. And they know the game. Trying to teach you the game of chess here. And it's ever-changing. And the parts are always moving. This isn't like a regular chessboard. Politics. State politics. Federal politics. National politics. International. It's a game of chess. The board's always moving. The pieces are always moving. And sometimes the squares that the pieces sit on, they just change colors. Without any notice. You have to navigate this stuff. It's virtually impossible. It's a massive puzzle. It's a lifelong puzzle. It takes that long to figure it out and try to solve it. And if you're lucky, you'll get part of the Rubik's Cube solved before it's time to leave this rock, so to speak. And that's saying something. If you can just figure out even a small piece of it, that's your challenge. Fit that in. A puzzle that takes a lifetime to crack, fit that in with everything else you have to do. Good luck. That's why you need guys like Dave Latour. You need guys like me to help guide you and help give you some cliff notes on what makes these maniacs tick. You know, I'd like to thank our guest, Mr. Latour, and I look forward to being back on his show We'll have to try to curb some of the swear words. And I appreciate the fact that he invited me up to his 100th show. It was a lot of fun. Live show. It was a challenge for me. But we got through it, and I acted like a responsible fraternity man for once in my life. And you heard where you can find him on Twitter and in other places, other social media, and also his radio show. So we did those plugs already, and that's the beauty of podcasting. You can go back and click play again and listen to it. Many people listen to this two or three times, the episodes, because they feel like they missed something. I listen to it too. I'll listen to every episode 15, 20 times just to hear my own voice. Of course, I'm joking. Special thanks out there to the folks on patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit. And we appreciate your help and your patronage and your support directly. That's the best way to support us directly. As I've said, you get the Pain in the Morning podcast, the video podcast, more Pain Show, Pain After Dark, other things we're rolling out, and we do anticipate some major changes coming in the next few months as things calm down, if they ever do, from the election, presidential election. I leave you folks, as I do every show, but this time I'm going to dedicate the last song to Mr. Latour. He'll get it, and it's timely. Based on the death yesterday of Eddie Van Halen, but also it's an inside joke with some frat guys. But so it's a win-win. We will see you again here tomorrow, and if you find some value in this, share it, because that's the only way we can do an end run around these social media tyrants who are always messing with us, and they have tried to put their foot on our head, but we keep moving around into different spots like a whack-a-mole game. But the way to counter them is that you share it if you find value in it. Just don't share it because, oh, I was told to share it. You have to like it. And if you think this will help enhance others intellectually, then share it. If not, then don't share it. That's your choice. It's a personal choice. Take care and God bless.
Dedicate one to the ladies. Summertime sip, babe, need something to keep you cool. I'm now summertime sip, babe, need something to keep you cool. Better look out now, though, Dave's got something for you. Tell you what it is, I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. Oh my, my, I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on a second, baby. I gotta put my banana Dixie cups, all flavors and push-ups too. I'm your ice cream man, baby. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on one more. Well, I'm usually passing by just about 11 o'clock. I never stop. I'm usually passing by just around 11 o'clock. And if you let me cool you one time, you'll be my regular stop. All right, boys. I'm going to put my banana Dixie cups. Oh, flavors and push up to 100 ice cream, man. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors can't be satisfied. Yes. I'm your ice cream, man. Stop me when I'm passing by. Satisfied. Oh, what time?
stop me when I'm passing by. Your eyes remain, stop me when I'm passing by. They say all my flavors can't you satisfy. One time, boys. Your eyes remain. Your eyes remain. Guaranteed to satisfy.